There are many reasons for someone to stay and do a good job. But if you want your people to really stay because they want to contribute, they want to go the extra mile and they feel part of the company, either as individuals, but also as like their team as a whole, and then we need also this relationship, this me being part and contributing to the mission of the company.
In the organizational context, the heartbeat of productivity and innovation lies within the dynamics of our teams. So, how can we build teams that not only work, but thrive together? In this episode of Future Ready, we again invite Dr. Eleni Georganta to shine a light into the key factors that drive successful collaboration in diverse organizational settings. Eleni is an assistant professor in work and organizational psychology at the University of Amsterdam and a leading researcher in team dynamics and collaboration optimization. Eleni, welcome to Future Ready and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Eleni, tell us a bit about your background. How was your interest in teams born?
Yes. So I'm a psychologist by training, and then I specialized in work organization psychology because I also wanted to understand the human behavior in the workplace better and to see how we can improve performance and well-being. But what I found the most fascinating aspect also before like studying is how teams work together. So how strangers come together, how they grow into a team, like argue, like perform, reflect. And this is what actually was, what interested me the most to understand better. Because, yeah, what actually happens, the team dynamics is something magic in my, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Organizations are a bit like Russian dolls of teams and sub-teams and inter and intra team dynamics that can either lead to excellence or can go completely wrong at any time. So if we think about how to foster workplaces full of inspired and engaged employees, it seems we need to have a close look on what actually happens on team level. So what, in your view, is an engaged employee to begin with? And how do teams get to feel engaged? And I think you often also use the term activated, no?
Yes. So this is a really good question. And I think, many people, so before us and after us, probably to try to find an answer. So in general, what we mean is how is the team members or the leaders or whoever is part of the team, its relationship with the organization and how has this, does this impact the decision to stay or to leave the organization? And in generally in the literature, there are three types of engagement or commitment, so to say. So the one is more the emotional attachment. So I really feel, for example, that I can identify with the goals of the of my company and I fit to what we're standing for and I'm satisfied with my work. So this is actually the optimum, what every organization should thrive for, because this effective commitment and engagement is what makes people stay the longest. But we also have other forms of engagement. For example, okay, I think I need to stay because otherwise this, for example, my organization might lose my knowledge or my skills. So this will be a burden for my colleagues. So this normative way of engagement. And the other one is the perceived cost of living. So, okay, if I live, then I might not be able to find such a good place, for example, that gives me work-life balance, or I might not be paid as well. So this is why I'm deciding to stay. But what we actually want and what allows teams and also individuals to go the extra mile is to have this relationship with a company. So, okay, I am in line with the vision of what my company is standing for. And this is also translated into the goals of the team. So what are we doing? How is this contributing to where the company is aiming to go? The company has to have like a clear mission. And also for the team and its members, it also has to be clear. How are we part of this? How are we helping to achieve this mission?
Super interesting that you mentioned this, because in our daily work in Cozin, we are you know, helping, as I told you before, we're helping organizations make change, making change of transformation and changes. And this, what you just described, is something that we hold also very dear to us. It's this creating this line of sight between me, my job, my team, team, and the contribution we play in the bigger role on all these levels. So you're really saying that this is, in your opinion, that is really what kind of separates this, what makes an individual and a team engaged and activated. Is that true?
There are many reasons for someone to stay and do a good job. But if you want your people to really stay because they want to contribute, they want to go the extra mile and they feel part of the company, either as individuals, but also as like their team as a whole. And then we need also this relationship, this me being part and contributing to the mission of the company.
Eleni, where does leadership and specifically communication by leaders usually go wrong in creating engaged environments?
Yeah, I think what leaders have, like this in-between role that they have, is kind of challenging. So I think this is why it very often goes wrong, because on the one hand, you have like the mission of the company, and on the other hand, you have the team goals. And then ideally, you need to balance the two. So you want to be aware, okay, what are your team needs, the skill sets, the knowledge that you have, and how does this fit with the overall mission? And how can I also communicate this to my team? So how can I motivate them and communicate to them that they are important? And at the same time, also give them some empowerment. So in the sense that, can they also shape into some extent where the company is going? And if this is not possible, it's not always possible to like a big extent, or maybe, I don't know, due to challenging times, then openly and transparently communicate why this is not the case. So kind of acknowledge that this might be a struggle at the moment, that what they want to achieve might not be in a moment like the best time, I don't know, maybe due to financial circumstances or to a big change, but keep them on board because like involving them might not necessarily always be possible, but keeping them in the dark and not trying to create this alignment between where the company is going and what the team is doing, I think to me is the biggest mistake.
I personally think that communication, internal communication, is sometimes a little bit paternalistic in a way. So, I mean, it's well-intended, but they do in a way sometimes treat the leaders and the employees sometimes, not as adults. What do I mean with this? I think sometimes organizations tend to sugarcoat things a little bit. And the, just, you know, the things that you just mentioned, you know, when there are problems, when there are financial challenges or something, that they try to avoid hitting the organization, hitting the leaders with the truth because they feel they can't handle it. Is this also something that you observe and that you can relate to?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do. And I think the main issue is that we have this impression that short term, I'm avoiding a problem. I'm not, I don't know, creating stress. People will not be uncertain. But in the end, if we do have, let's say, a financial problem, and if I do have to let some people go, and if I don't communicate this on time, then the problem long term will be much bigger. So people will start to panic. They will not know what is exactly the issue. So I think postponing and not communicating right away information, I'm not saying like tell everything to everyone. This is actually not protecting the company, but I think long-term it causes more problems than what originally like expected.
Yeah, interesting. One other thing I'd like to stay on one question on this communication with leaders. One other thing that also we observe often is the, and you just mentioned this in-between role of leaders, is that in the classical internal communication, you would have these typical cascades where you would provide leaders with communications toolbox or Q&As and a slide deck to explain changes to their teams. But we often feel that this traditional classic approach that doesn't leave a lot of wiggle room for the leaders to also localize the message, to also personalize the message and kind of feel comfortable with this and make sense of this yourself and truly authentically talk about this. But they often kind of feel forced to just kind of repeat corporate storylines. Do you think that is also one of the challenges why, you know, there is this lack of maybe authenticity, trust within then organizations, particularly when it comes to when organizations are in changes or more challenging times?
Definitely. And I think what is very difficult, because there is no room for making it yours. There is no room for, okay, this is what our strategy, like top down.
Okay.
This is why we're doing it. This is what you should communicate. But there is no room for, okay, let me listen also to you, because you also have a better picture of your people. So maybe a leader mm-hmm. has something to say or some input that might be also valuable for the overall strategy. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes what does not happen is like the top, like everything is coming top down instead of also allowing some form of input and some form of feedback also mm-hmm. like from, yeah, the lower levels to the higher levels. So bottom up. And I think what is also sometimes missing, like being a leader can be also kind of lonely mm-hmm. Because you're responsible for so many people. And then sometimes at the same time, you are what we call in teams like the boundary spanner. You're trying to protect your team and like keep the boundaries, who is part of the team and who is not. Mm-hmm. But you also need to understand.
And you are meant to know everything.
Yes.
You're meant to know, have answers to everything.
And you also need to incorporate, let's say, what your stakeholders need into the team. So it's a very challenging role. Mm-hmm. And I think what would also be very helpful is, let's say we have a leadership training and we give everyone like what they need to do, but also maybe allow them or create a space where they can talk to each other. So of course mm-hmm. they are not like part of the same team, but they do have very common responsibilities or very common issues that they can learn from each other. So have like a, yeah, sort of a group that I can go back if I'm having a challenge either with the people higher up or with one of my members that is not following the guidance, for example, that I want to give.
Super interesting. Like a peer group amongst leaders.
Yeah.
Which in my view is often when we do this, that's anyway the most credible source for leaders to hear it from others.
For sure. Yeah.
Super interesting. Eleni, in your career, you conducted many experiments with samples of teams from different professional contexts, including NASA. So what are, in your view, the crucial kind of elements that separates high-performing teams from, I don't know, low-performing or mediocre-performing teams?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question. I thought quite about this because I don't think there is one key ingredient. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, what I saw throughout this context and what is actually making a team more successful than another is being able to openly reflect about what is going well, what can be improved, that it's okay to admit our mistakes, and what are the specific things that we want to improve based on what we've learned so far. So the most important element, because many teams have, I don't know, specific meetings whose purpose is to reflect, but the translation from the lesson learned to a specific action, either a small one or a big one, let's say we have one meeting less or we need a team day, everyone in the office because we haven't seen each other for 6 months. This is what separates a good team from an excellent team. So this making it into a future action, what we learned, and not like leaving it to just a theoretical lesson learned for the future.
Again, is the important thing there, again, this level of ownership within the team to own destiny of the team and come up with actions, ideas, improvements themselves? Is this, in your view, the critical point here?
I think it is. It is also like, okay, we are responsible for, I don't know, a mistake that we did or for something that we managed to do very well. So this we keep and this we change. Mm-hmm. But it's also like this learning mm-hmm. purpose. So not only the theoretical learning, but learning through action. Okay, now we're trying something different together. And then again, having the responsibility of this new defined action mm-hmm. that we together decided to try out.
In our world of employee engagement, internal communications or employee activation, we typically have to deal with different audience groups. And one of the main big split that you typically have is between white color, blue color. So is this universally true for those two groups?
The reflection, you mean?
Yeah, the ingredients of successful teams. What makes successful teams? What separates successful from or performing from non-performing groups? Is it similarly true for blue collar, white collar?
I would say it is, because again, you have this, as you said, also I'm recognizing like my ownership into things. At the same time, I'm also giving, I'm also be giving this empowerment to make, it can be a very small change, or at least the idea, okay, I'm making a suggestion. Okay, I think we should start 15 minutes earlier every day because, or have the lunch break at this time for whatever reason. And this is being then concerned. So I'm giving some form of empowerment to the level that is possible, given the job, the task, the company. And then making it as part of the culture of the team. So because there are so many teams that reflect because, I don't know, there is a meeting that they are supposed to reflect on something, but this is often happens on a very theoretical level. Always the same people are talking and some others are just super quiet. So making everyone feel responsible for what we did and where we're going. And I think this is the case across contexts and jobs.
Super interesting. And I think we full circle back to the role of leaders in creating these teams, because you need to, you know, these leaders need to foster a space where it's okay to, where you know, to speak up equally. Everybody speaks up. You encourage to do this learning through action that you just elaborated on. Yeah, interesting. It's intuitive to imagine human relationships would change over and among generations. Is there also a generational difference between how teams work and adapt to, like have working in teams have adapted over the generation, if you see it only within the organizational context?
I'm not so sure how things might have changed because, I mean, people have been working together for many, many years. But what I think what has definitely changed in terms of team adaptation, probably throughout the generations, is how often teams are required nowadays to adapt. So I think in the past, routine phases were more regular. And now they're very rare to find. So the turbulent times are more the routine, I would say. So it's always something happening, from very small things like a Zoom link is not working, someone is sick, to bigger changes like we have a new leader, a new office space, sales drop, merging with another company. So there's always something happening. And there is a need for teams to be at their highest performance and continuously adapt at all these various changes. So I think this is something that is more recent and more challenging for teams nowadays.
The speed of change and this need for adaptation as a consequence, is this also reflected in more stress on team level?
Definitely. Because I think there is this idea from companies that, okay, I am implementing teamwork so that all my problems can be solved and we can remain adaptive. But at the same time, all these teams, in addition, they need to perform their day-to-day tasks. So they have their normal like performance cycles, and they're also expected to be resilient into whatever comes and always like high perform. So I think this can be very stressful. I don't think it is nowadays, there is like this unrealistic expectation that everyone, single individuals, teams, leaders have to be successful all the time. And this is not a normal life cycle of a team. Like a team cannot always high perform. And I think this pressure of, but you need to, is putting a lot of pressure on every individual and also on teams as a whole.
Super interesting. Yeah. So you're referring to a kind of an organization, or also teams need to have this balance between high phases of stress and then maybe a little bit more relaxation and then intense periods again. And you say that it's these breaks of relaxation, these times of pausing and reflecting, they are getting more and more shorter in these times of hyperchange.
Yeah, they're getting more shorter, and their meaning is also like becoming less important. Instead of like acknowledging this reflection and this pausing and see where we're going and where we came from is equally important as like executing the task itself.
Stepping a little bit back on teams, one question, I mentioned this to you earlier, one question that I always had in my mind was, there seemed to be, it was also in university or also in companies, there seemed to be always this learned reflex to say whenever there is a challenge, whenever there is a task at hand, oh, let's form a team, let's do a team. But I wonder, you know, is this really always the best thing to do to build a team? Or is it not better sometimes to give a challenge to one or two individuals to really go deep on a certain topic? So I guess my question is, when do I know what challenge or what task is best to solve in a team or by an individual? Do I make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I think there are different answers to that. So the third question is, no, in my opinion, we don't always need a team to fix our problems. And I think if we look at the definition of a team, every team member needs to contribute to the successful completion of the task. So in other words, every member is needed, for example, due to their skills, experience, knowledge, viewpoint, to complete the task, the team task. Otherwise, completing the team task is not possible. Mm-hmm. So for the tasks that this is not needed, so there is no interdependency between, okay, we need your experience with my skills and someone else's, for example, I don't know, point of view, then the answer is no, we can work this individually. So we don't need to work together in a team to successfully complete the task. So I think the question is, what is the task and who is needed to complete it? Mm-hmm. And then why are you selecting a team? For example, if it's about idea generation or decision-making and you want different views and perspectives, then maybe it's good to have like a brainstorming session, for example, with different individuals. But at the same time, for example, we know that because there are many biases also in teams, for example, we know that brainstorming is better to be done first individually, first to collect your ideas before getting influenced by the others, and then share it with the rest of the team. So this is the most effective way of doing brainstorming instead of starting all together. Or for example, when we have five people, let's say, and two of them can do the same tasks, then usually one of the two is not going to work as hard because they know the other person exists in the team. So it always depends. So for short answer, we don't always need a team.
Follow up question. Do you think that this level of knowledge and this level of maturity in terms of team formation and team setups is present in organizations? Because if not, this naturally leads to waste of resources and inefficiency. So,
unfortunately, I don't think we are there yet. I think this reevaluation, I think, often is missing to see, do we still need the team in its current form? Mm-hmm. Maybe the project changed and we need the skills that we have double for one of the two people, let's say, to move to another team. So I think we also, because we require teams to be adaptable, we also should have this adaptation aspect at the organizational level as well. Mm-hmm. So depending on what you're facing at the moment, like what kind of project you have, what kind of task needs to be executed, there needs to be also some form of flexibility in reevaluating and reshaping the teams that you already have.
Interesting point. I agree with you. That does not happen to the extent as it should be. I can echo what you said. I think it's once they are set up, they stay as they are oftentimes.
Yeah. I mean, of course, it makes sense. You need a lot of resources to reevaluate, to think where we should put whom. But sometimes it might be if the organizational setting allows it to, and it's also suitable for what organization, like is it a service that she's offering or like a product, to maybe have like a more project-based teams instead of like a very stable teams no matter what. So, yeah.
Super interesting. Eleni, since 2020 and the pandemic, hybrid work has become the new normal. How did this shape team adaptation and engagement in your view?
I think it challenged both and it still challenges both. I think it's more difficult for teams either who completely work virtual, or sometimes some are online, some are like face to face, or there is no like a clear face to face interaction. That is difficult to develop properties like, for example, like a shared understanding. What are we exactly doing, or what do we mean by this? Or building trust takes longer than when interacting face to face, or knowing who is good at what. Because the main focus is on tasks and its related processes, so planning, goal setting, and less on the teamwork aspects like reflecting, learning from each other, managing conflicts. So due to the virtual or the hybrid nature, more focus is placed on, okay, what do we need to do, instead of how can we work together to achieve it? Mm-hmm. And this is, we already know from like teams that not only the task, but also this teamwork aspect is essential for a team to be effective. So we kind of tend to neglect it in hybrid and virtual teams.
So what do you think is the role of internal communications departments in fostering, in strengthening this, what you just mentioned, this how level of working in teams? So how do we work together instead of what is actually our tasks? Do you, you know, what's the role of internal communication to foster this sense of belonging and this sense of identity?
Yeah, I think it depends on what is possible. Mm-hmm. So for example, if like meetings in person, like occasionally are possible, I would definitely go for that. So it's either like maybe a big event or like the kickoff of a project. Mm-hmm. So I've also observed teams throughout times. And if for those that have, let's say, a kickoff at the beginning of a project and the closing to celebrate or reflect and come together, this makes a huge difference because this...
Oh, really?
Yes, this formation at the very beginning. So this informal discussion, having a beer, mm-hmm. or at the end, like celebrating success and reflecting and having fun. It might be a project of a year, so it doesn't have to be like irregular, because of course, like there are many costs associated with bringing everyone together if they're not on the same place. But I would definitely try to do something in person just to see. Probably you have been also in interactions where people meet each other for the first time and you're like, oh, you're tall. Oh, you're like, so I didn't expect you to be like this or like that. So you just have an image of the person that you've been working with for months even or years, uh-huh. and you've never seen them.
Yeah.
And this face-to-face social interaction makes such a difference. And to add to that, because let's say this is not possible, there's no budget for it, let's say. I think what is very important is to make this team reflection part of the culture of the team. So make it a habit to discuss about how things are going, what we want to change, what are the lessons learned. So making this part of how the team functions. So how do we work on things is normal for us to discuss. And this also, again, comes the responsibility of the leader, mm-hmm. to kind of maybe start the conversation or make it like, I don't know, every 3-4 weeks. Like, it doesn't have to be long, but it has to be honest, right? And if it starts from the leader, maybe admitting own mistakes or some things that, or recognizing the effort that the others put, or like opening the discussion and making sure that it's okay to admit a mistake, nothing will happen. Mm-hmm. This is what will make people more engaged. They will feel like this belongingness. Okay, I'm part of this team. I also have this responsibility. And I know that my feedback will be considered, for example. So again, involve people as much as possible. So for example, ideas about next steps. And even if it's not possible, as we said before, about, let's say, the vision or a big change, at least explain transparently that this might not be possible. And for why is this the case?
Yeah, super interesting. In one of your publications, we read that, you know, the importance, you discussed the importance of defined task distribution and also social kind of social roles in processes of work team adaptation. Now, it seems when you look into job descriptions that there is a strong focus of task-related topics. You know, you need to be a team player or whatever. And often neglecting how important the different roles within a team can be. So the importance of a jokester to foster bonding or other examples. Can you tell us a little bit more about these insights of this research? And do you think this social role is kind of properly reflected in how companies staff teams or search for new team members?
I think this is also very nicely linked to what we just talked about, the social interaction and how important it is for also having this component for people to have the sense of belonging and working better with each other. And this is also what our findings illustrate. So, or that the lack of those is also linked to a team success. Mm. So having someone who can make a joke, can bring everyone together, remind how far the team has been, or convince everyone to go for a beer after, I don't know, like a long day where we achieved nothing and forget about, the current problems that the team is facing. So these are very, very important roles that allow the team to kind of, as you say, balance this, this task requirements, and also put again into the focus, how is our work together going? So maybe our task does not really reflect who we are at the moment, but we know that we are trying mm-hmm. our best here. And this is what the social roles are about. And I'm hoping that although the job application is not something that can be very often maybe even described, that this is what is happening in an interview process, so that we have someone, mm-hmm. not only the HR, for example, but also someone, let's say, from the team or the leader, that they can say, does this person have also the social skills that the team, for example, might need at this moment or might be lacking for our collaboration to be good, and also for the social interaction to continue to happen. So I hope that this fit is assessed in a different way mm-hmm. somehow throughout the selection process.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, oftentimes team members are involved in these interview processes.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, it's an interesting thought that this is also a strategy to overcome what is admittedly quite difficult to include in a job description or in a job ad. We're looking for the jokester or we're looking for that kind of type,
you might probably not apply. So.
Yeah, exactly. Am I funny? No, not really. From everything that we've discussed so far, it struck me that it's complicated and simple at the same time. And I mean, ultimately it's, we are all humans and we all strive to be seen. We all strive to feel safe. We all strive to feel kind of our voice matters. I can contribute. So it's very, very basic human kind of needs. And I wonder, Eleni, we all know these classical, the Maslow pyramid with the different levels of needs. So starting from this very basic psychological safety up to self-actualization to the very top. Is this still an accurate visualization, an accurate model in your view?
I think so. I think it can be also translated into the deep level because, let's say that with the physiological needs, which are the bottom of the pyramid, are given because I have a job, I'm being paid and so on. So I think the second one is the safety. So if I do have this psychologically safe environment where I can admit my mistake, where I can say, I actually don't fully agree, and this is fine for my team to hear and to acknowledge, then I can then move forward to the next step, which is the belonging, right? So this is my team. So I am sharing this and it's being accepted or heard because everyone is recognizing that this is for our own good. So this is certainly something. And then this also, if I do feel that I belong, then this is also for me, I'm fulfilling my need of self-actualization, right? So this is, I know who I am and why I'm standing here and not somewhere else.
I love the idea that our work is ultimately a reflection of our humanity. I think this is why communication is so important. And it's really an art and a science of better connecting to each other and to create something that matters together, especially at the organizational level. Eleni, I think this is the perfect reflection to wrap up our episode. Thank you for bringing all these thoughts to light. And thank you for joining us on Future Ready.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation and for the very, very insightful discussion. Thank you.
This was the second of two inspiring episodes with Dr. Eleni Gioganta. And if you haven't listened to last week's episode where we chatted about human AI teams and how to treat AI as a colleague, now is the time to check it out. Thank you for listening to Future Ready. Future Ready is produced by Cosin, the employee activation agency, on a mission to help employees make sense of change. Find out more at www.cosin.agency. And if you like what you're hearing here, please leave us a review or forward this show to someone who you think will benefit from it. Thank you very much for this, and until very soon.